Stanek sets now the pitch. Swing and a miss, strike three. Put it in the books. Ryan Stanek blows a fastball by Cody Clemens. The Mets have won the ball game, and they have taken a 2-1 lead in the National League Division Series. Game four against the Phillies right back here tomorrow night.
Hey, Sean, you've pitched in the playoffs before. How did this atmosphere compare to any you've had in the past?
It's the best. You know, the fans were into it the whole game, and you know, we had some huge moments and got into it, and you can definitely feel the vibe. So definitely up there with some of the best I've ever been part of.
All right, so you talk about the huge moments. That sixth inning when you walked the first two batters, you just went full aggressive mode against the heart of their order in Harper and Castellanos. What were you thinking in that moment, and what type of confidence did you have in your ability to just go in there and start pounding the zone?
Just took a breath, slowed things down. You know, I wasn't beating myself up. The walks were what they were. It's not because I was backing down or anything like that. So I knew that, you know, as long as I attack guys, you know, we can, you know, limit the damage. And that's what just happened. You know, I just attacked guys and wasn't trying to, you know, paint the edges or anything like that. Just go right after these guys and, you know, we got some good results.
You let out a pretty big roar after getting out of that inning. Can you remember what you were feeling in that moment when they turned the double play behind you?
I mean, at first I didn't think it was going to be a double play, but, you know, when I saw Schwarber off the base, I was like, oh my God, no way. And then it happened. It was my first war of the year, so that was a good one.
All right, finally, Sean, one of the things that this team has talked a lot about down the stretch is making winning plays that may not show up in the box score, especially from a pitcher's perspective. When you see Tyrone Taylor do what he did early in the game, turn around, bare hand off the wall, and make that throw into second base, just what does that mean overall for a group, and again, the winning mentality of this group?
Yeah, I mean, that's an unbelievable play. I know, you know, they work on this stuff all the time. Antoine does an unbelievable job with the outfielders. You know, having the confidence to go out there and just bare hand a ball and just fire absolute strike to second base is an unbelievable moment in this atmosphere, in this game. It was just, you know, just perfect from all ends. And, you know, shout out to Antoine and T. That was unbelievable.
What's your mental approach in terms of trying to flush this one, if that is the approach, and get ready for that backs against the wall mentality tomorrow?
I think it's, instead of just flushing it and forgetting it, I think right now it's really important to embrace what the situation is. We lose, we're going home. Baseball's over for us. And you know, it's a great opportunity, because if we're able to come in and scrape out a win here, I know that they do not want to go back to Philly for a game five.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast here on this Wednesday, October the 9th, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. NoG, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to another reaction edition here on the Talking Mets Podcast. Game 3, Mets beat the Phillies 7-2. They are a win away from eliminating the Phillies and moving on to the National League Championship Series for the first time since 2015. And Citi Field is one of the heroes. Well, you, the fans at Citi Field, one of the heroes from yesterday's game. I mean, that's really where I'll start. If there were the three keys, or not keys, but heroes of the game yesterday, I would say this. It was Sean Manaea. That's the obvious one. What an ace-like performance. Starling Marte, the veteran, with perhaps the biggest hit of the afternoon, early evening. And then you, the fans out at Citi Field, a situation that has been talked about, and where I'll kind of tie a little bow around everything here on this show. Starting with Manaea, and you know, when you look at the Phillies and you look across the diamond, you look at Wheeler and Nola and Sanchez, and tonight it'll be Ranger Suarez. And then on game one, how Wheeler went out there and, as we talked about, put together that Mike Scott, Oral Hershiser type performance. And the only way that the Mets were able to overcome him was to get him out of the ballgame and get into the Phillies bullpen. And Nola, for all the negative you could say about yesterday's performance, five innings, five hits, four runs, two walks, eight strikeouts, a couple of home runs, it could have been so much worse. Nola, with the eight strikeouts, really kept himself into the ballgame. And, I mean, look, it was Castellanos with a nice catch out in the outfield. Lindor just got under one earlier in the ballgame, leading off the ballgame, actually. But Nola could give you that performance. You know, the Phillies have those kind of guys. And Suarez, he was 9-1 at one point. I think his season made a turn for the worse after London. But you have guys on the other side that could give you a really high-leverage ballgame. But more specifically, you have a couple of guys on the Philadelphia rotation, like Wheeler, like Nola, that could give you ace-like performances. And all throughout the year, you weren't sure. And as recently as August, we weren't sure how the Mets rotation really stacked and fared up. And it wasn't until that rotation came together, it was one of the top 5 to 10 in baseball from August 1st-ish on, that the Mets really took off and are in the position they are now. And it's critically important for that to continue, especially because of what you saw with another shaky, creaky, wobbly bridge in that bullpen. But the real turnaround for the Mets, especially in the absence of Kodai Senga, who we weren't sure was an ace quite in the mold of some of the other aces that have anchored rotations in this postseason, was when Sean Manaea, who was having a good year, but simply by watching the ball game in the dugout and lowering his arm angle when Chris Sale was pitching against the Mets in late July, just by doing something like that, morphed himself into an ace, somebody that could be right now is pitching right up there with Wheeler, with Sale, with any of the remaining aces, Gerrit Cole, with any of the remaining aces in the postseason. And he went out there, and look, I've been watching the Mets for a long time, for 3 decades plus. And I saw left-handed dominant outings. I saw Al Leiter shut the Reds down in 1999. I saw Mike Hampton not give up a run, I believe. It was not a single run against the Cardinals as the NLCS MVP in 2000. Tom Glavine in Game 2 against the Dodgers in 2006. I remember Mike Francesa calling it a late Whitey Ford career type of outing against a very, very good Dodgers lineup in a series the Mets would go on to sweep and win in 3. I've seen great left-handed pitching performances. I wasn't around for Kuzma and Matlack, but I'm sure that some of theirs in the postseason in the late 60s, early 70s was up there. But Sean Manaea yesterday was every bit as good, with the exception of not being able to finish the ball game with the last 6 outs. He was every bit as good as those luminaries in Mets history. And he basically put the Mets on his back with his 7-inning, 3-hit, 6-strikeout performance. His work in the 6th inning after he walked a couple of batters, the only 2 walks he had the entire game, and how perfectly he pitched to Harper, locating his off-speed pitches, his sweepers right there on the outside corner, making them just enticing enough for Harper to chase and miss his bat and keep Harper off balance. And then a little bit of luck, a little BABIP luck with Castellanos, but able to make the pitch, get it just inside enough to have Castellanos line out to Iglesias at second base. And at that point, really, that was one of the two turning points of the ball game right there. Well, actually three, I will say, in addition to the three heroes. So Sean Manaea, hero number one, a pitching performance for the ages. And maybe as this postseason, and we'll see how many more starts Manaea is going to get, but maybe as this continues, we were talking about Yamamoto last offseason, and oh, maybe the Mets should go after Blake Snell, and who's the ace they could either trade for or sign. I know Corbin Burns will be a free agent this offseason, maybe Max Fried. And the talk has been who is the Mets ace? And we don't know what the kids in the minors will turn out to be. But since DeGrom left, since Scherzer left, since the Mets really had the entire five aces that they built their entire team a decade ago on fall off the cliff and leave, Manaea right now is pitching every bit like some of those guys, like the Harveys did in the 2015 postseason, and Syndergaard, and dare I say DeGrom. And is it sustainable? Look, he's been doing this pretty much since the trade deadline, and he was good even before that. Maybe something's clicked, and he will undoubtedly opt out of his contract at the end of the year, his very reasonable two-year, $30 million contract. Boris is his agent, and we'll see where that goes. But right now, when you hand the ball to the Mets ace, Sean Manaea, there's no doubt in your mind you're going to get a quality outing. Sure, he didn't have a great outing that Friday against Milwaukee, but everybody has a stinker. And he got squeezed a little bit in the first inning that night. But he came back with a great outing in Milwaukee in Game 2, an outing that would have earned him a win if the bullpen could have held on. And then he has a gem of a performance against the Phillies. And now the Mets have really put their boot on the Phillies' throat. The second hero, the second guy, is a little bit of an overlooked Met, because we forget about how good he was in 2022, and that's Starling Marte. So the bases are loaded, nobody out. The Manaea just gets out of that big top half of the inning. And at that point, the momentum has shifted. It went from this tight game, both teams trading, you know, the Mets really doing the two big blows, Philly starting to chip away at Manaea. Manaea escapes, does a Houdini act. And then the Mets load the bases, and then they get a couple outs. I thought Sawball should have sent Nimmo with one out. Luckily, he didn't. But Orion Kerkering, who's not an easy guy to hit, he's got good stuff. There's Starling Marte up against Orion Kerkering, and he lines a base hit. And Marte, for all the frustrating things about his defense, and obviously it was bad luck about how his body broke down so quickly into this contract, because he was a key part of that 2022 squad, a key part of that offense, an all-star, a guy that put himself in with the core stars of Lindor and Pete and Nimmo to form one of the better offenses in Mets history. And a lot of people forget about how good he was and then how damaging his broken finger and then the fact that his body gave out, the two groins, the double hernia surgery that he needed to have that washed away 2023. And quite honestly, I thought he was probably done after watching him last year. But here he is. He's not the same player. He's not a guy that could play 150-plus games. He really never was. He's a guy that could probably give you a good 100 to 110 games, probably miss about a month every year. But when he's out there, yeah, he'll frustrate you sometimes with his defense. Still has a pretty good arm, but his defense has taken a huge, steep decline. But he's still a professional hitter. He had that big hit after the Pete home run to drive in the insurance run in Milwaukee last week. He knows how to hit. He had that big hit against the Nats to win the ball game a couple of weeks ago when the Mets needed that first win in that series, that final homestand at Citi Field. But he can be so cool out there. Here's a guy that nothing seems to bother him. And he comes up with this huge two-run single that validates the inning, continues the momentum, really puts the Phillies in a vise with nine outs to go, and allows Manaea to come back out. Because I know Reed Garrett was warming up, and I don't know what would have happened if they didn't tack on the two runs and had a bit of a cushion. Maybe that's why Mendoza pushed Manaea to go that extra three outs. But that hit, to me, was the turning point. Sure, the Mets would add a couple of more runs after that, and they needed another big performance out of Stanek to get a big out while the Phillies were coming when it was 6-2 and they had some runners on base. But just going up there, not doing a lot, not playing hero ball, Marte gets the two-run single. Don't forget, he also had a great at-bat on Saturday night during that rally in the eighth inning to drive in a run with a sacrifice fly. He's not the component offensive star that he was in 2022, and that was a career year, so maybe that was never the player the Mets were signing. But he has certainly been in the middle, quietly, of a lot of these rallies. And he's got another year left on his contract. I don't know what the future holds for Marte here in New York. And as he continues to age, he'll become less useful in the outfield. And guys who need a lot of DH time and are expensive and have limitations on how much they could play sometimes are expendable in the right deal. But where would the Mets be without some of the big hits over the last few weeks that Starling Marte's had? And he's often been forgotten about because of his drop in performance, because of his injury, because of the fact that, you know, the Mets over the course of the first few months of the season really did it a lot of their damage, especially when they had that big run in June without him, and then he got hurt. So it's nice to see Marte continuing to push his baseball career forward, continuing to be part of this thing, and an important part of this thing. But I thought that hit was huge. And Marte is so much on championship teams, that veteran that gets forgotten about, that may not be the same, but is a professional hitter and a guy that in a big spot, you just don't necessarily want to see up there. So that's the second hero of the ball game. Huge hit by Marte to give the Mets a 4-0 lead. And then the third hero, the third pillar of this ball game was you. Whether you were there or not, I'll say you. After the first week of the season, you guys remember that. And I remember talking to a friend when I went to Citi Field late in April who goes to a lot of ball games. And I spoke that first week of the season about how awful the Citi crowd was. From opening day onward, it almost was like the frustration of 2022, the additional frustration of how bad 23 went, how all winter they were told erroneously by the media that the Mets are rebuilding and that they weren't interested in competing in 2024. It was almost like it all was accumulated into frustration and anger and negativity. And everybody's been showing that panned picture against Detroit when the Mets were getting no hit. And then they came back in that ball game early in the season and how empty the Citi Field was. I think it was for a doubleheader, if I'm not mistaken. And that whole week, and I remember going on with Anthony Rivera, a good friend at Subway to Shea, and saying, this is not a home field. This is awful. The fans are awful. The relationship between the fans and the players is not sustainable. At one point, as the season was spiraling out of control in May, I said, I think it's time to get some of these guys out of here, whether it be Alonso, maybe Nimmo, maybe even Lindor, which was a fantasy because of the contract. But the fans are tired of this group. They're never going to forgive them for 2022. The burden of failure that has built up over the years since 86 is getting heavier and heavier on these guys. Cohen doesn't have a buy anymore. The honeymoon with Cohen is over. He's now 4 years into this. And it was bad. And then I remember a lot of fans got mad at me. I know I've lost at that point listeners, people who said, I will not listen to your show because of what you said. I basically said, you guys are as much of the problem as the team. If the team is going to come home, play to an empty ballpark, and those who are there, and I'll never criticize people for not spending money to come to a game, but for those who do go, who do have the opportunity to go and sit wherever, if you're going to go there, sit on your hands, grouchily boo, and hate the product on the field and use it as a three-hour therapy session to get whatever frustration this team has caused you in your life, well, go do something better because you're not helping the team. It's not going to make them play any better, and you're hurting the organization in the long run. And that happened pretty much the entire homestand. And I talked to a friend, like I said, a couple of weeks later when I went to watch the team play the Pirates at Citi Field, and he said, Mike, I was there that week for most of the games, if not all the games. It was brutal. The fans, the comments, the waiting for the roof to cave in on everybody's head. Something changed because I remember that night, I thought the crowd was great. And for the most part, and we talked about at one point the attendance and the challenges of going to a ball game because of the variable costs that come with it. The crowds were pretty positive all year. There wasn't a point where I said, hey, the team is being hurt by Citi Field. Sure, I thought at times they played better on the road, and I even said I thought starting the postseason on the road was probably better because the Mets, and some of this is the fans, obviously, but not all of it, played tight at home. But yesterday, as And I was listening to a good chunk of the game on the radio, listening to Keith Rad and Howie Rose, watching on social media the pregame festivities, the goofiness and craziness with Grimace and tailgate parties in the parking lot and fans lining up in droves to just shake Steve Cohen's hand. I looked at that fan base. I looked at the hunger that this fan base has to win. I looked at their performance yesterday and how loud they were and how supportive they were. And the Phillies, who have admitted pretty much since the series started that this is going to be a crazy place to play. They switched their rotation to keep one of their young starters out of the raucous City Field crowd. They purposely put a veteran like Nola, who's been around a little bit. You heard the clip coming into the program. I mean, Nick Castellanos basically said, hey, don't let us get back to City Field, back to Citizens Bank Park, Philadelphia, because that's our home cook and that's our advantage. But maybe we could squeak one out here. He's not even talking about winning tomorrow. Or actually later today, I should say. I'm coming to you early game day morning. He's not even talking about winning. He's talking about let's see if we could squeak one out. Because the Phillies know that the energy that this crowd is giving the Mets is creating a real problem for them. And Mets fans, I know going into today, will be ready to step on the Phillies' throats. And let's see how the Mets use that energy and how they capitalize on that. But I thought the real turning point that showed me that this fan base has turned the corner, and hopefully for good, at least for this team, this iteration of the New York Mets. Here come the Phillies in the eighth inning. Maton again, shaky. And he gives up a run with Harper single. And then Castellanos right away rips a single to make it 6-2. And you're thinking to yourself, I think that was off of Stanek that he had. Yeah, Stanek gave up the hit, I think, to Castellanos because they got Maton out after Harper. And now you know that it's getting a little quiet. The fans are starting to get tense. They're starting to worry. They're starting to see the Phillies make a comeback. And all they could probably think in their head is this is going to be another crushing. There's that little demon on the shoulder that's saying this is going to be a crushing loss. You know it's coming. You know this bullpen can't get six outs. They're going to have to go to Diaz. He's been shaky. And really, the Mets, if the Phillies had gotten Diaz out there, even for a batter, that would have been a huge win for them, even if they had lost, because of the amount of pitches that Diaz has thrown and how shaky he's been pretty much the entire postseason run since Atlanta. And what I was so impressed with is how you heard that "Let's go Mets" chant. I don't know who started it, what section started it, where it started, but there was that, I heard it really loud on the broadcast as at that point I turned on Fox and the whole crowd goes, "Let's go Mets" when Boehm is up against Stanek and Stanek gets a ball in, a fastball in, Boehm muscles it, but there's Harrison Bader to make the catch. And then immediately the Mets come out and tack on an insurance run, an important insurance run to make it 7-2. And then bing, bang, boom, Stanek puts the game away in the top of the ninth. And away we go. The Mets go up 2-1. And you, the fans, had a part in it. And to me, there's ever an example of how far we've come with this fan base from the awful performance of the team and the fans in the 2022 wild card series against the Padres. How the place couldn't even sell out that decisive game on Sunday. How after, I mean, Scherzer did it by taking the team out of the game, by getting his doors blown off in game one on that Friday night, how from the moment that series started, the fans were out of it. They gave you a little bit game two that Saturday night when the Mets won. But for that whole series, it was so disappointing. The fans were tense. They were expecting to lose. City Field didn't seem like a home field advantage. I believe I said this, or at least I thought it. I know I said this on the program back then. It was almost better for the Mets to play those games in San Diego. And here we are 2 years later after an epically bad injury plague 23 with a team was a fire seller at the deadline. This ballpark is stacked to the gills. Probably if they could jam another person in there, the place might have fall apart. And I thought that crowd, I mean, there was some great crowds in 2015, but I thought the crowd yesterday from what I saw virtually from home was maybe one of the best crowds Citi Field has ever had. Maybe the best, the loudest, the most supportive. Sure, the Phillies made them a little bit nervous late. That happens. That happens in any home. I don't care what home crowd you are. You're going to have those points where you get into a little bit of a rut. And instead of sitting back, waiting for the roof to cave in, waiting to feel sorry for themselves, when Stanek was up, where another hit, that gets really interesting. The fans say, no, no, let's push these guys. And they do the Let's Go Mets chant, and look what happened. The Mets got out of it. And I know you can say, well, Stanek made the pitch and things like that. That's what these guys need when they're at home. Look, they know the Phillies are coming. They know that the Phillies have every ability to put a five spot up there at any point in time. You get a couple of bottom of the order guys on, and you get that to Schwarber, Turner, Harper. That inning, a crooked number could go at any point in time. They're not stupid. They know that. But they also need you to know that, hey, we could do this. We could get through this. And the Phillies have a tremendous home field advantage. And Citizens Bank Park has been cited over the last couple of years as this great home field advantage in the postseason. And now, Citi Field might be that and that much more. Look, I don't want to even talk about how challenging it will be to go back to Philly in the shadows against Wheeler to win a decisive Game 5. I don't even want to get into that today. Because the key here is the first three innings. The crowd showed itself to be a 10th man. They're going to be raucous today. I know on the post-game Twitter spaces, we had a fan say, hey, it's, you know, I'm going to the game. It's house money in a way because it's not an elimination game. I want to have fun. It's going to be a big party. Maybe that'll play to the advantage, actually, of the Mets, where the fans will be like, hey, man, we're going to Philadelphia one way or the other. But I think that energy, that intensity, that excitement, whatever the version of rooting you want to do, will be big the first three innings. And if I'm the Phillies, you have to withstand those first three innings. You have to withstand that, because if you could either put up a crooked number early and take the crowd out of it, or give, you know, have the Mets give you their best shot, and instead of getting a couple of home runs like they did over Nola, maybe you survive it and you keep that thing scoreless. The deeper it gets into the game, the quieter the crowd gets, the more you take them out of it, the more you become used to it, almost like running on a treadmill where you're in a lot of pain, but after a while, you just get used to it and you say, I could go, I could keep going. It becomes part of you. That's the strategy the Phillies will need to deploy to beat Citi Field. But if the Mets put up their crooked number early and that crowd starts really getting into it and puts Ranger Suarez on the back of his feet, well, you can maybe start rolling the champagne into the clubhouse and see if you could prepare for that next celebration, the second celebration in a week. That'll be the key today, with Quintana on the mound. And who would not, I mean, yeah, you would love Manaea. Another, if Manaea could actually be healthy, you'd love to have him on the mound today. But who else on the staff, in the starting staff right now? He's pitched so well after an awful August. He turned it around after that ground ball performance in San Diego on that Sunday afternoon a couple of months ago. Who else would you want on the mound? When you signed Quintana, veteran, you were thinking of how he pitched down the stretch in St. Louis. You were probably thinking, and we're surprised to see how he pitched, like I've been telling you, Zach Wheeler pitch for pitch in Game 1 as a Cardinal a couple of years ago. That version of Quintana, that in an elimination game in Milwaukee just a week ago, when the Mets bats couldn't sniff a hit against Tobias Myers, kept them in the ball game through six. That's the guy that is on the mound today. And I think, especially because he just recently shut the Phillies down in Philadelphia just a couple of weeks ago, I think he's going to put in another really good performance. Now, the question is going to be, how do you get some bridge outs to Diaz? Because I don't think Quintana is going to go as long as Manaea, and he's certainly not going to go nine innings. And after last night, after how shaky Maton is, and I know Reed Garrett has pitched better, but I'm not sure how much I trust him as the lights get brighter. And I love Stanek, but he was good in the ninth inning. But boy, he was straight as an arrow. And that's one of the challenges with him. He throws hard, but he's prone to home runs, and he throws straight as an arrow. And he's as likely to give up a bomb to any of these guys as Maton or any of these other iterations of the bullpen. The Mets' bridge is wobbly. It's missing some wooden panels, and it's not reliable. And at this point, you can't change that. You can't go out and make acquisitions at the deadline. You can't bring up kids from AAA Syracuse and see if they could find something. You got to mix and match it. And I had said during the Twitter spaces that if I was Mendoza, I would make David Peterson your multi-inning reliever for this game after Quintana. And you would save Severino to back up Senga for Friday's potential piggyback opener start with Senga. And try to get, if you could get nine outs, depending on how deep Quintana goes, that may be necessary. But try to get six outs from Peterson. Because if that top of the lineup, Schwarber, Turner, Harper, comes up before the ninth inning, or even before the eighth inning, you're not going to be able to deploy Diaz again. You can't do what you did Sunday. Bring him in the seventh inning and try to do the bridge backwards. Do Diaz and then the bridge. Because right now, there is no bridge. It's how long could the starters go and what kind of Diaz are you going to get? And you have those six to nine outs in between. It's part of the blueprint. It's part of what we talked about all year. So the way to close that gap, I think, is David Peterson. I think, depending on how much longer this run goes, whether they're going to go on and face the Dodgers or San Diego, if they could close it out over the next two games here against the Phillies, I think Peterson out of the bullpen, I don't know how easy that's going to be for him. I don't think he's a daily up-and-down guy. But figuring out, depending on what he can provide you, based on what position you could put him in as a starter working out of the pen, he has to become, I think, a much bigger part of the bridge, because I'm not so sure any amount of Grimace, OMG, or Mets magic, unless something changes with Maton and Stanek, who are still your best options, I'm not sure the Mets can navigate a lot of these lineups. I mean, they're barely navigating the Phillies lineup, and let's face it, the top three or four hitters is where it's at. I mean, they're really good, but you face San Diego, that's a deeper lineup. You face the Dodgers, that's a deeper lineup. I'm not even going to get into the American League right now. It's way too soon to do that. But as good as the Phillies are, there's softness to that bottom of the lineup, where you could say, all right, Stanek. I mean, once you got past Castellanos, you felt a bit better because you're like, all right, they're not pushovers, but they could get through that. So that's really the question today and the question going forward. If there's anything really to quibble about yesterday, it's that. It's that they didn't finish clean. They finished, and they got a big insurance run, and Stanek did the job. And he looked good in the ninth. I had no problem with the ninth inning. But he also, I think, the extra tack-on run from Lindor, the double by Lindor, almost put the nail in the coffin and allowed Stanek to just go out there and just say, all right, we're good. And the biggest thing there is to keep Diaz off the field, or even Diaz from warming up. So everything is set up now. Crowd, Citi Field, home field, Quintana, veteran pitcher who has pitched well in the postseason, has a resume of pitching well and recent resume of pitching well. You have potentially another guy that's been one of your top starters, Peterson, available to give you 2 to 3 innings and maybe mitigate some of the shakiness of the bridge. And then it's getting it to Diaz. And what version of Diaz will we see is now that he's rested for 2 days, had a chance to marinate on the postseason, and now for the first time since this run started, get a chance to pitch at home with the trumpets blaring as he comes in. I mean, that place is going to be wild. If the Mets are 3 outs away and Diaz comes in to close it, I mean, that place is going to tear apart. It's all set up. It's all there. Now, the last time the Mets had a situation like that, 2-1 against the Dodgers, they were facing Clayton Kershaw. And Kershaw shut them down, and then they had to go win a classic Game 5 in L.A. I'd like to see them avoid history doing that again, because I know they could go down to Philadelphia and win a decisive Game 5, even against Zach Wheeler. It will not be easy. It will be very stressful, and it's not exactly giving you the best probabilistic outcome to get back into this NLCS. But they're facing Ranger Suarez today. The Phillies don't look like a team that really expects to win in this environment. They're a team, if you listen to Castellanos after the game, that wants to survive this environment and find a way to get back to Philly. The problem with losing today, if the Phillies find a way to overcome Citi Field, I think that the momentum will shift and they'll be a hell of a hard team to beat on Friday. I'm not saying this is a must win because they're playing a good team. You can't put that pressure. But what I am saying is momentum has firmly swung to the Mets. Even after that terrible loss on Sunday, the Phillies know they stole one. The Phillies didn't walk away from that game saying, hey, we're in good shape. Their bullpen was, again, leaky. The Mets had them with their backs against the wall. It took quite a few mistakes by the Mets pitchers for them to get to the point where they could win it. So they didn't walk out of there feeling, oh, wow, the momentum swung for us. They felt like, all right, we survived. And after this performance yesterday, after Manaea with his performance and Citi Field showing you that it's this great home field advantage, the momentum is firmly switched over to the Mets. They have it all there for them. They've earned that. They've built that with their win in Atlanta, with the way they played in Milwaukee, how they've handled Philly to date. But now you've got to cash that chip. You got to bring that home. And the fans have to do what they did. Starting to get a little tense. Yell out of your Let's Go Mets chant. Recalibrate the mindset. Keep the energy positive. This is not the Mets of 07. This is not the Mets of 15. Heck, this is not the Mets of 2022. This is a whole different iteration. It's a tough team. It's a team that reminds you a lot of some of those late 90s, turn of the century, pennant-winning teams that were managed by Bobby V. They got some really good component players, some tough veterans. Yeah, they have stars, but maybe the other team has bigger names. But they have stars that are getting it done when it counts. And now they have a chance to bring it home with Jose Quintana on the mound. So buckle up, another afternoon into early evening of baseball. I know that you probably were ready to collapse. I know I was ready to collapse after the Twitter spaces yesterday. Which I'm thoroughly enjoying. So check it out on X. Continue to follow me at Mike Silva Media and Anthony Rivera Subway to Shape podcast. And if you want to hop on and listen to us react in real time post game to the Mets Phillies, that Twitter space is a place to be. Sure, if you are a subscriber to the podcast, you'll hear a lot of what I had to say the day after I marinate on it. But you know, it's fun. It gives you a chance to listen to more talkie Mets. For free, and I've had some really great comments. I mean, I know you want to probably watch some of the post game because of the interviews and whatnot, but I think our content and what we're providing there is every bit the quality of what you're seeing out there from anybody else who's a Mets content creator. So hope you've been enjoying it. But buckle up, another day of baseball, another exhausting day of baseball. In about 18 hours or so, we'll see where the Mets are at. I'll be on the Twitter spaces with Anthony Rivera, Subway to Shea, and hopefully it'll be a champagne-soaked Talking Mets podcast studio where we celebrate another victory, have another clinching celebration, and then look on to the championship series and possibly the Mets winning a pennant, which is an amazing thing to say here on October 9th after the journey this team has been and how close they've been to the abyss multiple times this season, as recently as last Thursday night in Milwaukee. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in to another edition of the Talking Mets podcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, Talking Mets No G, and don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@talkingmetsnog. And I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy your Wednesday. We'll be back tomorrow morning with another Talking Mets podcast reacting to Game 4 of the Mets-Phillies. Join me on the Twitter spaces tonight if you can. Until then, take care, everybody. For the